You are listening to the Doug Hagman Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagman.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the west coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the east. Welcome to Hagman. It's the Doug Hagman Investigative Hour for today. It's Tuesday, September 12th, 2017. Thanks for joining me this morning for an in-depth look at tomorrow's headlines. I'm going to be delving deep into a number of important issues today. One of the first things I want to bring to the forefront is what has been taking place, or what we are witnessing taking place, inside the Trump White House. I think what we're watching here is a coup from within. And I've said this before on this radio program, on this platform and other platforms, but I want to just drive this point home. I think what we as Americans, and we as patriots, and we as conservative Christians need to look at is the treachery that's taking place inside the Donald Trump White House. And what you're about to hear, or what I'm about to lay out for you, has been the product of a lengthy, multi-sourced investigation having numerous sources. In fact, I believe, although I'm not certain 100%, I think Roger Stone and Alex Jones, for naming two, and again, regardless of any source I name, regardless of what you think of sources, just put that out of your mind. But the collective totality of sources, the information I'm getting is extremely serious with respect to the events taking place inside the White House. Remember, it is the objective of the shadow government to eliminate all roadblocks, speed bumps, whatever, flies in the ointment, whatever it might be, in their quest to establish complete dominance, this collective control over the population. This is about power. This is about controlling the direction of both the nation, but the world. This is much bigger than people really understand. Now, I used to think, people know me. I hope people believe I'm a rational, well-balanced, well-measured investigative source of information. Hence the name, my investigative hour, this Doug Hagman Investigative Hour. Taking information, evaluating, vetting the information, and then providing it to you. I've got to tell you, I've done the research I've done up to this point. I did a complete 180 today. I was going to talk about Peter Barryczauka has done an amazing job, and you hear me reference him often, with good reason. He is a tenacious, tireless researcher that has done investigative work on a number of key issues that are affecting America through the media. And he's done a wonderful job in explaining the deception of the optics we're seeing. It's through Peter Czaka's written word, it's somewhat like what you saw with 60 Minutes. I don't know how many people, I spoke about this last night, how many people saw Steve Bannon on 60 Minutes? The image of Steve Bannon, the picture, the photograph, the video, where he's got the red circles under his eyes and the red lips and the ruddy complexion. Well, I have to give that to him. I mean, what are you going to do? But as Eric, the tech here at the Hagman Report, you know, the lighting, how you control the lighting, the camera angles and such, it's an art and a science. But if he wanted to, he could make any one of us behind the camera look like a zombie or worse. Yeah, there are worse things. And that's exactly what happened to Steve Bannon on the 60-minute interview. Either in post-production or concurrent with the video, the lighting was changed, and of course it made Steve Bannon look horrible. And people of my generation and before will remember the televised debates between Richard Nixon and John Kennedy, and the optics behind that, and the effect that that had on the American population. It's the same playbook, the same tactics, just different people. Well, the reason I brought that up is Peter Barry Chowka, is his written word exposes those optics, and not on that subject, but on the larger scale. In other words, he is exposing the illusions and delusions with respect to the media. So I was going to start out today, and in fact, up until an hour ago, I was going to start out today by talking about the articles, the reports by Peter Barry Chowka. I'm going to save that until tomorrow, because this, what he has written, if you go to Hagman Report and American Thinker, I would urge everyone to seriously read and download those articles. I cannot stress enough how important they are, and comment on them, especially at American Thinker. Comment, make comments on them. Send them to your friends, your family. Post them on your social media network. The message is important. The backstory here is important. But I'm going to save that until tomorrow. And the reason being, I want to speak with Peter Barry Chowka off air. Interview him off air. Have a conversation with him again, in camera, off air. Because there's something else going on here. There's a takeover from within, which leads me to today's program. I've said in the previous programs, the presidency of Donald Trump, his election, and you see Hillary out there today, yesterday, the day, with her book, What Happened, blaming everyone but herself as to why she lost the 2016 presidential election. All right, fine. What does that have to do with anything? Well, when you look at the bigger picture, and I'm a big picture guy, I also deal in the minutia, of course, but I'm a big picture guy. When you look at the big picture, it is my belief, and based on everything I've seen, that the election was supposed to be very smooth. In other words, the information, the opposition research done on Donald Trump was supposed to be so effective that Hillary Clinton would have handily won and inherited or occupied the Oval Office. That did not happen. And one must remember, I think we all need to remember, that the globalists, the shadow government, they make plans, but they're human. Sure, they've got more power than most, but even at that level, sometimes stuff happens. Unforeseeable things happen. And I think this has been totally misrepresented, God steps into the picture often. Now, I've said this before, I'm a white Christian male. I'm proud of that. But I don't wear my race on my sleeve, nor do I wear necessarily my Christian beliefs to the extent where, for example, Steve Quayle and I, we're two different people. Pastor Langford and I, we're two different people when it comes to faith. I've got strong faith. For example, Pastor Langford ministers to other people. I'm not a minister. I'm not a pastor. I'm an investigator. but I believe. And that belief is what carries me through the day. But I thank God for as much as this is not talked about, I think God has had his hand in the events of last year. And I think that that's been misunderstood, misrepresented, God's role in what happened in the election. You know, it's often said where God gave us a reprieve through Donald Trump. And some, even among within the Christian community, will take that and attempt to say that we are deifying Donald Trump to some extent, making him this this spiritual or religious icon. I don't agree with that. That's not what we're saying. Certainly that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the road to hell, the communist utopian hell. I know that's an oxymoron there, but has been slowed by the mercy and grace of God from last year. So I want to be clear on that. I don't believe that Donald Trump is anything more than the God's merciful hand, in my view. And I'm speaking from the heart here, of slowing down, not stopping, but slowing down the forward progress of the communist agenda. Especially after 8 years of Obama, and especially after really a half a century of removing God from our daily lives, removing God from the schools, and then even worse, forcing Christians to act or to, if you want to do business, for example, and you're a baker, you've got to bake that cake for that homosexual couple, or you're going to be sued into oblivion by the Obama Justice Department, for example. That's one example. So let me be clear when I say that Donald Trump is here is somewhat of a reprieve. I say that again because I think it's one of the most misunderstood and misapplied statements being made by Christians. That's just my personal opinion in my professional opinion as an investigator, knowing people, watching people and their reactions to certain things. But since Hillary did not secure that position in the Oval Office, the objectives of the shadow government changed. Instead of going full force under the direction of Hillary's handlers, we'll say, the objectives changed. Instead of propping up the Oval Office and filling the various positions from the Supreme Court to the federal judiciary to whatever appointments, instead of really filling those with the communists, now Donald Trump has come in and attempting to fill those positions with constitutional or people loyal to the Constitution. But even that is being subverted at the highest levels because the simple formula of the people, the power brokers, is defeat, discredit, co-opt, and if none of that works, removal. So we've already gone through step one, defeat, meaning Hillary Clinton did not defeat Donald Trump. Again, the old news, absolutely. Important to today, absolutely. So Donald Trump won through the Electoral College, and many will argue, attempt to go to step two here and to discredit or delegitimize the presidency of Donald Trump, saying, well, he didn't win the popular vote. Well, that's not how the system works, and I mentioned that yesterday. Now, here's where it applies today. All of this applies today. What are we seeing taking place inside the Oval Office? Well, we're seeing, and with I have great concerns over this, Keith Schiller, the director of White House operations, is leaving the White House. Now, this is the man, and I do know this for a fact. I know that Alex Jones talked about this yesterday, and I think it was yesterday. And I think perhaps even Roger Stone talked about this the week before. But there is turmoil inside the White House created by General John Kelly. But the fact that Keith Schiller is leaving the White House, and one would call Keith Schiller President Donald Trump's personal main primary bodyguard, body man, whatever you want to call that political appointment, but certainly loyal to the man himself, looking out for Donald Trump's best interests. And now he is being stripped away. Why? And this is consistent, the information I have from my inside the Beltway source and sources, primary and secondary sources, suggest that it is General John Kelly, the chief of staff, who has clashed with Keith Schiller, stating, "Hey Keith, despite the fact that you are the person who puts Donald Trump to bed essentially, and is by his side every waking moment, or just about." Now, if you want to retain that position, now this is General John Kelly saying this, you're going to have to go through me. You're going to have to make an appointment, or you're going to have to get my approval as White House Chief of Staff. This is General John Kelly. And this is very disturbing for a number of reasons. But Keith Schiller, being the man that he is, loyal to Donald Trump, refused to do that. Oh, and by the way, Mr. Schiller, saying by General Kelly, any contact that you have with President Donald Trump, I need an after action report. Oh, really? Can't do that. Well, then you're out. This should be distressing to anyone concerned about the safety, security, and continuing safety and security of our president. Because once more, the formula, if you can't defeat, and of course that didn't happen, and you can't discredit, that's a slow process. Certainly, Donald Trump cannot be co-opted. So the only alternative here is removal. Now, how do you do that? Well, just go back to August 18th of this past, August 18th, last month. There was a House Democrat who called on Mike Pence and the cabinet to force President Trump to undergo a mental evaluation, demanding that they see whether he's incapacitated and needs to be suspended from office under the 25th Amendment. Now, you might think that this is a bunch of hooey. Well, that's fine. Remember the optics I talked about. The representative I'm referencing is Zoe Lofgren, a California Democrat, wondered whether President Donald Trump might have dementia, or maybe the stress of the office aggravated some sort of mental illness crippling impulse control. Now, Ms. Lofgren is one of many who are saying, you know, he's not fit to handle the office. You hear this on late-night television programs. You see this on late-night television programs such as Rachel Maddow and other similar programs, or various morning shows, Morning Joe, for example, where you have people coming out and questioning Donald Trump's ability to govern. And this, and one might think, well, they're free to talk, they're talking, and they're just, you know, no one really is believing them. But don't forget the impact that media has on the American public. You like it or not, you have to at least accept it. You have to understand what's taking place here. The picture of this that they are attempting to paint, they collectively are attempting to paint on Donald Trump, is just, it's incredibly, brutally in-your-face kind of scenario. And I'm going to tell you something. Removing this man, Keith Schiller, from the side of Donald Trump opens up Donald Trump to a number of possible ways of removal. And you might think that this is just, again, in the class of absolute crazy talk, but I've got to tell you, look at Reagan, look at Kennedy. I mean, there's plenty of examples, and I don't have to go through all of them. You know what the examples are. But the shadow government, the people who are really running things, this is what's going on in the background. And just to be clear, just so people understand the players in this, General John Kelly was selected by Donald Trump on December 7th of last year to head the Department of Homeland Security. Now, that's a cabinet position, so he was confirmed on January 20th of 2017 as the head of Department of Homeland Security by an 88-11 vote. Well, then he was appointed White House Chief of Staff this past July 28th, 2017, replacing Rince Priebus. And he took office, I'm speaking about John Kelly now, on July 31st of 2017. That put him in direct conflict with, and by the way, with everyone, I guess, within the inner circle. And you know that John Kelly has been isolating President Donald Trump. And to be a leader and to be isolated, that's extremely dangerous. So I am personally concerned about the safety of our president. And even more so, the campaign to paint Donald Trump as a man that does not have his wits or mental capacity about him. Now, I've heard, but I have not independently confirmed rumors saying that, for example, Donald Trump is losing stamina and, as a matter of fact, has been caught a couple of times slurring his words, a la Nancy Pelosi or whatever. But think about the possibility when you have that veil of protection or that curtain of protection in the form of Keith Schiller removed. John Kelly has been compared to Alexander Haig, for example. And you remember, folks, you remember Alexander Haig from the Nixon administration, and then when Reagan was shot, I'm in charge here. You've got that, and in fact, you can go back to Woodrow Wilson with the author of Philip Drew Administrator, Colonel Mendel House, you know, being Wilson's alter ego, if you will. But there's plenty of historical precedent here of what I'm talking about. So and who's really like behind all of this? Of course, the deep state or the shadow government in particular, but it's also the war machine, that being H.R. McMaster, who and I've also confirmed this independent of other alternative media sources, where McMaster has this very deep resentment and very low opinion of his boss, President Donald Trump. So what you've got is a whole bunch of stuff going on inside the Oval Office, the White House intrigue. But it's not because, or it's not at the hand of Donald Trump. It is because of those wanting to take Donald Trump out of office. And remember, I had spoken about this years ago, the chaos. This is about causing a constitutional crisis, putting our country in turmoil. That's the bigger picture here. That's the big picture. Can it be done? Sure, it can be done. And the battlefield is just not one battlefield. It's numerous battlefields. There are numerous battle fronts and new ones opening every day. So this is what I really want to stress today, is the fact that I do believe there is, and has been, but right now there is a multifaceted, multi-pronged plan to take out the President Donald Trump, take him out as president. Now, and I know there are people listening right now that'll say, well, if that happens, there's going to be really war, civil war. I mean, blood will flow in the streets. We're not going to let that happen. Yeah, I do understand that, and I do believe that will happen in a number of, or in perhaps geographically, in big cities and such. I think that will happen, and I think that there is a general understatement of the strength of the average American person, as well as the resilience of the average American, but most assuredly the strength. So although I'm sounding an alarm bell, I'm not sounding, you know, the panic button. There is no panic button here. There is an alert, an alarm, but no panic. But if you don't think that this can happen, it most assuredly can happen. And we're seeing the various people, the lawmakers, the elected people who have been elected, painting this bad, this erroneous and false picture of Donald Trump, being with the help of the media. And this is, again, you look at Peter Barry-Chauca and his analysis and assessment of the media assets. This is why this is so important, and how this meme, this narrative, continues throughout social media by extension, as well as the entertainment, which has become news. And by the way, it's the 180. It's before you used to count on news as being news and entertainment being entertainment. Now the lines have been blurred, and entertainment, or what is purported to be entertainment, has become news. There's been a complete flip on that. But I want to caution everyone. I do believe that our president is indeed in trouble with respect to his safety and the safety and security of the office as well. And I also think that addresses a number of other issues. You look at Barry Satoru, Barack Hussein Obama, still in D.C., kind of in a shadow capacity. Not kind of, I guess in a shadow capacity. What's he still doing in D.C.? And what is the relevance, if any, remaining of Hillary Clinton? More importantly, however, I would look at Barack Hussein Obama, Barry Satoru, his position still inside the Beltway on Embassy Row. What's he doing there? What is really taking place behind the scenes? And by extension, when Steve Bannon was on 60 Minutes, and shortly thereafter, of course, he identified a number of elected officials, senators, Corker for one, Senator Bob Corker for one, as individuals, or as Republicans who are, and Democrats, but both parties, but who are engaged in this silent coup against Donald Trump and against the agenda of the American people. And please understand, when I talk about Donald Trump, I'm not talking just about Donald Trump as the president. I'm talking about the movement, the ideology, the feeling, the spirit, the American spirit that put him in that office and that caused the great upset. It's the American objective that put him there, or the American values, I should say, that put him in that office. It is you've got people in Los Angeles and people in New York and, you know, on both coasts and in big cities who believe that they are intellectually superior to the hayseed farmer in flyover country, when that's the furthest from the truth. They are the brainwashed masses. They are the ones with the intellectual, they're morons. And they have been brainwashed into believing the communist utopian lie, the Sanders Clinton lies, the DNC lies, where the state can take care of everyone, when in fact the flyover country, you and me, and people like us, we know different. We understand that it's up to us. It's up to us, and our values are the values that made this country great. It's our value system, our ideology, our Judeo-Christian roots, not the Muslims, not the Buddhists, not the Hindus, I'm sorry, but it's the Judeo-Christian heritage. It is the white European Eurocentric. Now, this is not, trust me, and I'm going to get emails on this, I know, but you look at the history of our country, and you look at how this country has been built up. It's been built up by the white European, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant male, for example, and that's not to the exclusion, by the way, of the other Christian faiths. I'm just saying this. But you look at the strength that we have exhibited over the course, well, since our founding. All of the other people, the snowflakes, the whiners, the millennial snowflakes now we've got plenty of great millennials, but the snowflakes, the progressives, the collective on the, you know, within the urban areas, it's that mentality, their mentality, of course, to them is the only thing that means anything. We don't know anything here in flyover country. We don't know. Our values are so yesterday. This is the battle, again, is much larger. And we are seeing very efficiently the Alinsky plan, the Cloward-Piven strategy, all of these progressive communist socialist tactics come into play and being used today. All of the stops have been pulled out since Donald Trump has been elected. And now people like Paul Ryan, John McCain, are being exposed for who and what they are. The establishment Republicans, and don't forget, you had Mitch McConnell saying, look, don't talk to me about draining the swamp. I don't want to hear that. That really, well, that's exactly what we need to do. Now, to segue into something very extremely relevant that was just recently provided a decision recently made. You talk about not draining the swamp. This covered, of course, covered by the coverage of the hurricanes and bad weather and other news. Lois Lerner gets a free pass. Now, one might ask, and I think one has every reason to ask, what's the Trump Department of Justice doing to give Lois Lerner of the infamous IRS fame a pass? You may not have heard this. This might have been flooded, pardon the pun, by the coverage of the hurricanes. But this is important because, again, this is another exhibit, an illustration of how deep and how murky the swamp is. And one has to ask why. Why did Lois Lerner get a pass? And if you're wondering what I'm talking about, let me explain. It was 3 days ago. The Daily Caller reported, Chuck Ross from the Daily Caller reported that the Justice Department says it will not prosecute former IRS executive Lois Lerner for targeting conservative groups during the 2010 and 2012 elections. In a letter to top Republicans on the House Ways and Means Committee, Assistant AG Kevin Boyd said that after careful review of the case, now this is Trump's Department of Justice, the DOJ won't pursue charges against Lerner, who oversaw the IRS division that reviewed tax-exempt organizations. And I'm quoting now from this. After this process, the department determined that reopening the investigation would not be appropriate based on available evidence. This, according to AG, Assistant AG Kevin Boyd. Now, he wrote that to Texas Representative Kevin Brady, the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, as well as Illinois Representative Peter Roskam, the chairman of the subcommittee on tax policy. Back in April, Brady and Roskam asked AG Jeff Sessions to review the Lerner case and to consider whether she should be charged with a crime. Lerner, of course, we know, was accused of improperly targeting Tea Party-affiliated groups, by denying or stonewalling their applications for tax-exempt status. And at the epicenter of this were the, and continue to be, the Christian conservative slash Tea Party, although that's somewhat of an antiquated term now, but Tea Party affiliated groups, that they were in the crosshairs and again still are. Now, Lois Lerner, who has since retired from the IRS, remember she pleaded the fifth in two separate congressional hearings, one in 2013, one in 2014. In 2014, the Ways and Means Committee referred Lerner to the Obama Justice Department for prosecution. The Ways and Means Committee referred Lerner to the Obama Justice Department for prosecution. Republicans then on the panel accused her of obstructing justice and misleading Congress. The Obama Department of Justice declined to prosecute her 2 years ago. Now, Sessions is doing the same thing. Now, to their credit, Brady and Roskam said that that decision is absolutely terrible. It sends the message that the same legal, ethical, and constitutional standards that we live by do not apply to Washington political appointees. And isn't that right? Justice for some, but not for all. And so this is a big deal. This is a miscarriage of justice, at the very least. Now, Sessions DOJ left this open a little bit. They said we'll take a look if there's additional evidence to come forth, more evidence. But for right now, no, we're not going to pursue this. And by no means does this mean, for example, that Lois Lerner is innocent of any wrongdoing. It means that the system of justice is deeply wounded. It's amazing to see this take place, especially under the Department of Justice, Jeff Sessions, especially in the Trump administration, and especially as the swamp monsters are fighting back. And speaking of somewhat changing direction here, but not by much, speaking of justice not being served, or in this case, not being covered by the corporate mass media, is the trial of Robert Menendez. Did you know, how many American people out there know that a Democratic senator is on trial for corruption? The composition of the U.S. Senate could be altered by its outcome. How many people know this? Will Senate Democrats push for his resignation if convicted? I'm talking, of course, once again, about Menendez. No, not the Menendez children. Senator Bob Menendez, New Jersey. ABC, CBS, NBC have been virtually silent on the bribery trial of Democratic Senator Robert Menendez. Now, when you assess the coverage, and Town Hall, I think, did an article on this. This was a couple of days ago at the very least. Let me pull it up here. In fact, Matt Vespa posted an article on Town Hall on September 9th talking about this. And let me cite this article here. Now, Matt Vespa writes in the Town Hall article about the Menendez trial, which I do predict there will be a guilty verdict in this, and I do believe that Robert Menendez, this is my personal and professional opinion after looking at this, will be convicted. And now Vespa asks, how will this, for example, impact tax reform, infrastructure, hurricane relief packages, and immigration? Well, we don't know, he writes, because the media decided not to devote much coverage on it. They buried this. In fact, Newsbusters, an arm of the media research center that tracks liberal media bias, said that a whopping 22 seconds were devoted to the story on CBS back, I think it was on the 8th or 9th of, last Wednesday, the day the trial started. ABC's Good Morning America decided to give the new season of Dancing with the Stars, 22 minutes and 39 seconds of coverage. This subject got 22 seconds of coverage. This is incredible. Okay, and he further breaks down the news, the mainstream media, and I don't think I have to go through this with you. I'll just briefly touch on this. As for the big three, he's referencing CBS, NBC, and CBS of the trial. The evening coverage went as follows. Now, this was pulled from the Washington Free Beacon. CBS Evening News led off with a story about Hurricane Irma, followed by Houston's recovery from Harvey, Trump's $1 million donation for Harvey relief. And look, I'm not going to go through it all. It ends with Legos. Yes, the toy Legos. That's CBS Evening News. Not a mention about this trial. NBC, the same, pretty much the same, as well as ABC. Now, Fox News, CNN, and MSNBC have covered the trial, though their audience is dwarfed by that of the big three collectively when you look at it. However, the impact, I would argue the impact of Fox News, just as MSNBC on the left, there's a certain impact that Fox News creates, as well as MSNBC creates. Which again, I goes back to what I said about Mr. Chalker's articles about Fox News. You've got devotees that follow these polar opposite networks, and what is happening with respect to the Murdoch boys is they're attempting to take down Fox, and change Fox, but take down Sean Hannity, for example, because, and Tucker Carlson and others, but the main target here is Sean Hannity, because he is the one providing the most coverage to issues like this, as well as the Iwan scandal, the Iwan criminal conduct and such. But think about this, Robert Menendez, the trial, and I'm going to be following this, and the show is going to be following this. This trial could change a lot. But you see, Lois Lerner off the hook. Robert Menendez on trial right now for corruption. Is this going to, does anyone know about this? If a tree falls in the forest, is there, you know, no one's there, obviously. You know that philosophical style question. Are we yelling into an echo chamber? Are we hearing our own echo as opposed to really reaching the masses? I would argue that it's only because of the honest media, which is now I'm going to adopt, thanks to one of the listeners of the Hagmann Report, I'm going to adopt, whenever I say honest media, I'm referring to the new media, the alternative media. So that henceforth is going to be my name for shows like ours, shows that provide the real truth about the important issues, not about some Lego story or about some Dancing with the Stars. We don't need that, or the latest on the U.S. Open, whatever. But this, the honest media now, is going to be my term for the alternative media, and I believe it's an appropriate description. But Robert Menendez on trial, but Lois Lerner gets a pass. I'm just covering the issues here now. Different situations, but nonetheless, we have to keep our eye on this because this will change the complexion to some extent of the Senate. But yeah, he's on trial. But to circle back to the original, to my opening statement here, I would refer people to an article at Front Page Magazine that was just published this morning. Trump, Nixon, and the Media, Back to the Future. It's by Bruce Bauer. And it's interesting because just the title itself should speak volumes. Writes Mr. Bauer, ever since the election of Donald Trump, the media has been grabbing at everything they could come up with to smear him. And they've been shameless lemmings in echoing one another's nonsense. That he's been in bed with Putin. He's got Alzheimer's. He's got dementia. Now there's this meme, this narrative of comparing him and his administration to that of Richard Nixon. Writes Mr. Bauer, just a sampling in May, and you have to look at this not with with you've got to look at this kind of in a bigger picture here to see the ebb and flow of the narratives. But writes Mr. Bauer in May, Jonathan Friedland in The Guardian, Nate Hopper in Time, and Alyssa Rosenberg in The Washington Post wrote articles drawing parallels between Donald Trump and Richard Nixon. Now, in their efforts to yoke the two together, all three journalists seemed desperate to find a likeness, a comparison, something that they could relate. As Trump does today, wrote Rosenberg, Nixon faced questions about his tax dealings and whether he was using the presidency for personal profit. Remember, now this is my words, remember the Checkers speech pre-election. But anyway, I don't remember Nixon facing major questions along those lines, but I do know that Trump, from using his presidency for personal profit, has waived his salary and took a financial hit for entering politics. Let me tell you something. You talk about self-enrichment. You talk about using a government entity for personal profit. The poster child for that, of course, is Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton, but specifically Hillary Clinton, as in her position as Department of State with the Clinton Foundation. I don't think there's any argument there. And if anyone with an ounce of sense, they can go and certainly do the research on that. Or Peter Schweiker's book, Clinton Cash, just an unbelievable expose about how Hillary Clinton used the Department of State as a mechanism for pay to play. This is just incredible. But back to the front page article, the Nixon comparison with Donald Trump, writes this author, this is only the tip of the iceberg. Nothing new here, of course. The news media has been trashing Republican presidents ever since the Cultural Revolution of the 1960 revolution or election, since that is the Nixon administration. In order to maximize, writes Bauer, the impact of the trashing, to be sure, the media invariably argue that most previous GOP commanders in chief were actually not that bad, but Donald Trump is terrible. And that leads me into what I opened with, and that is the vulnerability now, especially with the upcoming departure of his body man, Keith Schiller. You see where this is going here? Once more, the formula, if you can't defeat, then you destroy. And now this is the destruction phase. So it's an interesting read nonetheless, and it's a lame attempt at attempting to grasp at similarities between Richard Nixon and Donald Trump. But nonetheless, it is being, if that's the case, you might ask, why am I talking about it? The reason being is that it's the left, progressive, socialist, communist narratives that this is part of that narrative. This is one of many bricks in the wall that will fall over or has the potential to fall over onto the administration and therefore onto the American people, and that's you and me. This is important to you and me. So you've got to look at what the enemy of freedom, the enemy of Donald Trump, the enemies, plural, what they are doing to take down Donald Trump, because ultimately they're coming after us, and we have to realize that. And I think there's a huge lapse of understanding here. This is not about Donald Trump. This is about something much bigger than Donald Trump. It has always been that way. And it started over a century ago, but in earnest half a century ago. But even more so of modern times, if you look at the selection and institution of Barack Hussein Obama in the office of the president, and then you have Donald Trump coming out, taking the presidency, winning the presidency, supposedly stealing it from Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton, you see the whiplash that this has created. I use that term deliberately, whiplash, that the ascendancy of Donald Trump to the office of the presidency has caused, because you have a bunch of you've got a bunch of these I'll just call them communist yuppies. Boy, am I dating myself there, right? Communist yuppies are brainwashed masses with Mao's little red books in their upper shirt or right the you know shirt pocket, and their tie-dyed shirts. With Che Guevara or Fidel Castro or whatever, carrying flags and saying, "Look, it's one world," and essentially falling into that one world meme, that narrative. It's these people who are attempting to reformat and reshape what we're seeing today, and the news media is very good at really taking this and pushing this forward, again, with the optics. Go back to the optics. And sometimes, and I'll say this, I really believe that perception, the people's perception, ultimately becomes their reality. And what more can I say about that? Except to say, their perception becomes their reality, meaning that they want it to become our reality or make it reality. And the powers, the power structure, is actually facilitating this. The media, don't underestimate the media, their role, their ability to change public perception. But at the end of the day, all of this, why is this happening? Because of the vacuum that has been created during the 8 years. Now, it didn't happen just during the 8 years, but the vacuum that has been created during the 8 years of Obama, it goes beyond that. It goes back into taking prayer out of public schools. It goes back to forcing the public schools to provide education free of charge to children, regardless of their status as legal or illegal in this country. It goes back to the dilution of a nice deliberate diluting of our moral and spiritual heritage and history. This is all and how all this fits together. Look at the bigger picture. Obergefell decision 2 years ago that supposedly, and I'm putting that in quotes, legalizing homosexual marriage, an assault on the moral and moral fabric and spiritual fabric of our country. And look at the damage that the Obama White House, the Obama power structure has done to our country. But the foundation was laid many, many years ago, and it was just merely accelerated under Obama. So anytime, and you know this, when you're in a vehicle and you slam on the brakes or you make a quick left or right turn and you know you're pushed against the door or you're pushed up against the dashboard, that jolt is jarring. And this is what we're seeing collectively today, in my view. And this is why that we are in this so dangerous of a period today. And this is why Donald Trump is in peril. I truly believe in physical danger. So who's waiting in the wings? Well, Mike Pence. Well, do your homework on Mike Pence. Who is he? Oh, the package looks good, but what's inside the package? And is this something more than that? Is there a coup well beyond the obvious taking place? I think that's the case. I'm going to be unfolding a lot of this in future programs. Really digging deep into a number of issues, and you know, at the epicenter of many of these, at the center of this collectivism, this push for centralized control in this country, are just a handful of people, but very influential people. You've got the Clintons, you've got the people like George Soros who have got the money, you've got the large foundations, you've got the corporations, you've got all the components of the shadow government, and then you've got the military part, which under the shadow government is the deep state and the military-industrial congressional complex, as Kevin Shipp talks about, as being part of the deep state. But what I'm going to do and what I intend to do is break down all of this, identify the people current and previous, and by the way, upcoming, that are actively attempting to take down our country. But understand that this has been going on for a number of years, a number of decades, and really over the past 100 years. But it's the Obama, currently under Obama, this Messiah, and he's been called the Messiah, who is still yet to depart D.C., waiting in the wings for what? And actively going after the Trump administration, throwing at every possible moment the roadblocks in front of Donald Trump. And think about how Congress has, and think about the appointments that have yet to be made. And think back, Bill Clinton, as soon as he got in office. Did he clean house when he got in office? The first day, 93 U.S. attorneys fired right away. That can't and has not happened under Donald Trump. Yet it should have. You see the difference here? The pushback from the well-entrenched Republican establishment, as well as, who say, no, we're your friends. No. Go back to the Cicero quote from yesterday. I gave. The enemy is within, and we are fighting a very formidable enemy within. And it's difficult to know who to trust, especially when you're being isolated. So going back to my opening beginning of the program, is you've got Keith Schiller now being gentlemanly, making a gentleman move out of the White House because John Kelly says, if you want, look, you bow to me before you can get to Donald Trump. We've got to watch John Kelly. We've got to watch McMaster. We've got to watch these people inside the gates. And what else? We also have to watch for signs of Donald Trump being placed in specific peril. Because what I see taking place is something reminiscent of 1963, something reminiscent of 1981, Ronald Reagan, something reminiscent perhaps of a more Machiavellian situation even before that. Go back to Shakespeare, but understand the historical aspect of what we're seeing here. This is today was more of a decompression, if you will, and an assessment, me speaking from the heart. But as I go through with additional programs, I'm going to be very specific. I do want to mention before the close of the show, and I want to assure people that we've got right now a staff of about a half a dozen active investigators right now working on and infiltrating various groups, and we've been very successful in that. There's been actionable intelligence we've shared with local law enforcement that I'll be sharing with you at the appropriate time. This coming Thursday, you've got the speech at Berkeley with Ben Shapiro. Trust me on this. This is, you want to watch that. But I'll be very specific as days go forward. I ask that you share this program, share the knowledge of this program with others, please, on social media, and tell others about the Doug Hagmann Radio Show, 9 to 10 Eastern, on Global Star Radio Network and Blog Talk Radio. Please share this with your family, your friends, and anyone who will listen, because we are about to break some absolutely new ground here in terms of the level of information, the depth of information that you need to make decisions. You're going to need to make decisions very soon. Till later, 2 to 3, John and Joe. 7 to 10, the Hagmann Report. Join us. Follow me on Twitter, Facebook. Till next time.
The Doug Hagman Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagman Report. Tune in to The Hagman Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com.